Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
He's back in England.
I am back in England after my short-lived, well, actually, 10 days. That's a holiday, isn't it?
That's holiday. Nice.
Down to Tenerife.
Oh.
Never been there before. Never been anywhere like that before, let's say. I've never been on a lad's holiday kind of situation.
Yeah.
It's fun. I wish I had done.
What was the best thing?
I read a James Patterson book that was left behind next to the pool. And because, Mark, I've spoken about this on 3 podcasts now, different podcasts. Uh-huh. Ron Japan, Luke Pitcher. I think that if you are published and I'm reading your book, I'm expecting a certain level.
Right.
And I didn't get that from James Patterson. I think he might be using an AI to write his books.
Got ya.
It is mad.
He seems like one of those people who is successful enough that maybe he oversees.
Yeah. I mean? Yeah. But I would argue he needs someone to oversee because some of the stuff in there.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
Awful writing. And he set £600 million he's worth or something.
Really?
It's amazing.
If you were worth that amount of money, there is no way that you'd go, I better write a book.
No,
I have got too many options to do. But, you know, I'm sure there is a way of working out a way in which a book with my name can come out and be made. Mm-hmm.
Look, you've been on the other end of that situation.
I've done exactly that.
Exactly.
It's a good living for someone like me at the bottom of the pecking order. And it's a better living for
the people who give
them more money than the writer gets, you know. So I'm not saying I don't know. I don't know whether James Patterson writes his books or not. I just think it's unlikely.
For legal reasons.
Yeah.
He does.
Why would you?
Why would you? But why would you, James?
Why not?
Look, lighten the Lord, you're clearly not doing very well with the one I read. Give it to someone else for. Give it Giggsy till the end of the season. So there's a scene. Imagine, if you will, put yourself in the shoes, the hard-boiled, hard-soiled shoes of a New York...
the ghostwriter?
No, because I used words to describe stuff. I am... you are a New York police detective, celebrated. He's the guy who just knows how to get things done. And he, your son, is in prison for drug dealing.
God damn it.
God damn it. And... you go and see your son in prison, and he says, seeing my son like this in prison for drug dealing hurt me emotionally and physically. And that was what he said. Doesn't explain the emotions, doesn't explain the physical pain he's experiencing.
No.
He just says, it hurts me emotionally and physically.
My granddad had a big thing where my granddad, he would read books it very quickly.
Yes.
So he wanted to read Les Miserables,
right.
And it took him, I'd say, a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how do you get through like a massive book that quickly? And he was like, because I know what rooms look like. He said, I don't need to read 2 pages where they say there's some chairs over here and there's some... He's just like, I just need to know there's a room. That's all it is. And then I can move on. So he'd read through and he'd go, probably not important. No. The line there, fine. Got a general gist.
Isn't there like apps nowadays where you can just kind of skip through? Like it's just like an audio book, but it just tells you like in 15 minutes, the basic tenor of someone's argument in a book.
I mean, we've talked about that, about things like York Notes, where WrestleMe is very much the York Notes of the wrestling industry.
Frequently longer than the original artifact.
But I mean, if it wasn't for York Notes, I wouldn't even know the first thing about any of the books that I did for my English degree.
Oh yeah.
I would get those York Notes and I would read them through, and people would go, "Don't just read the York Notes." It's like, why, you mugs?
I'm not reading A-level Bleak House. It's fucking massive.
Yeah, I'm not going to read that. I know what a room looks like. Well, while you were away, Pete, I got to go and see some live wrestling.
Oh, Muggy Mark.
Thanks to Joe Roche, who is a tremendous chap, who unfortunately got COVID. He'd bought two tickets to go and see the WWF at the O2 in Greenwich in London. And because he couldn't go, he very, very kindly offered them to us. You were away.
I was away.
So I took one of our mates to go down, and we had a right good time.
Good.
It was really, really nice to be back. I haven't seen WWF since we went in about 2006, maybe, when we were part of XFM. And I really enjoyed it. It was great.
What was it like? Don't describe the room.
What was funny about it, there are a few things I took out of it. One was, when you got there, the queue for the merch stall was like nothing you've ever seen in your life.
Right.
There were probably 120 people queuing at that one merch stall out the front. When you got in, they have the merch stalls all around the top.
Yeah.
And every single one of those must have been six lines of people 20 deep. I mean, they couldn't get enough.
Do these people not know that there's online shopping?
There is online shopping. And there are a couple of t-shirts there that are, unique.
Right, yeah. Okay.
But, I mean, not many of them.
Fridges of bird blood.
But I couldn't believe how, by the time I got there, which was well before the show started, I basically said to Joe, "I'm going to pick you up a Jinder Mahal t-shirt."
Right.
And Joe had been online and he'd seen it says on it something like, "I am the Maharaja of pain." And he was like, "Not sure I'm..." And I was like, "No, you're getting that one. That's going to be funny." I saw a lot of like young Asian lads wearing those Jinder Mahal t-shirts.
Yes.
And you forget... I mean, I joke about like Jinder Mahal. I never want to see Jinder Mahal wrestle.
No.
But then, of course, I suppose to a lot of people, he represents their culture and he represents, you know, people like them. Like I used to be with the British Bulldog when you'd see him on American television. Mm. And so I was really pleased to see that. But I couldn't even get a Jinder Mahal t-shirt.
Oh, no.
They'd all gone. So there was... this is my way of saying, Joe... I haven't emailed you yet. Really sorry. I didn't get you anything in the end. Couldn't get near
the merch
store.
Oh, Mark.
I bet
you got in the queue for the beers, or didn't you, Marky?
Well, I did.
I was sick.
My phone provider is O2. And if you go to the O2, you've got your own entrance, which is empty.
Right.
And you go in there, and then you've got your own bars, which are empty.
Just for... Because nobody's on O2 anymore.
It's just me. It did seem like it was just me.
Got your own little gorilla position.
Yeah, and what was really interesting about it was seeing it. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen a house show, and this was very, very much a house show performance.
Right.
So the very fact that the wrestlers are there slightly is deemed enough.
Yes.
And it was funny, a lot of the matches were just kicks and punches and playing to the crowd.
Yeah.
And then a roll up.
Right.
And it would just
They love roll ups at the moment as well.
They're so easy.
It's
just having a nice little roll up into a snuggle.
Yeah.
And I was slightly struck by the low work rate, which was a surprise because in the interim since seeing WWE for the last time, I've seen lots of British wrestling, Rev Pro, Progress, Attack, and being close quarters to people who are working their asses off at a level that you don't even see, you know, on most American television pay-per-views. Mm. I was quite shocked at what was delivered. Funny things come out of it, though, that you go, gosh, like Street Profits. They're a tag team. I think they're quite good. Mm. Watching them live, I thought they were phenomenal. And they were the ones who really stood out the most on that card to me as being people who were really connecting with the crowd, who were working as hard as they could. And that was magical. Mm. But it was nice to, you know, for me to tick everyone off. You know, your Kevin Owens, your Baron Corbin.
Right,
You know, Shinsuke Nakamura was there. Mm. Becky Lynch, you know, Bianca Belair.
Well, that's quite a good lineup then.
It was. Mm. The other thing that it really drove home, and he's a guy who obviously we're going to be talking about because he's in the first match of the upcoming WrestleMania that we're chatting about, Drew McIntyre. Mm. And I hadn't really cottoned on to just how popular Drew McIntyre is. And I don't think it's just a British thing. I don't think it's a case of just because he's a Scottish performer that you come to London and everyone is like, one of us.
We also love our mums.
Yes. He had an incredible crowd connection.
Yeah.
And the way that he was holding himself was different from everybody else. He was treating it like, I'm among all my mates and you are going to see a different side of me where I am having a laugh and I am pleased to be here. Mm. And it was really, really, I was really impressed by how good he was.
Nice.
He did a little chat, which got some traction in the news stuff afterwards, where he said, I have been telling WWE, I want to bring a major pay-per-view to the UK. Mm. And he's been saying this for a couple of years now. Mm. I don't think he would be saying that on the mic at a house show
if it wasn't.
No. Yeah. So there's been some reports that SummerSlam next year may be coming from one of the stadiums in Cardiff.
Right.
So there's a possibility that we are going to be getting a SummerSlam. I mean, that is exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah. When was the last SummerSlam? When was the last
1992.
Kind of 92.
Yeah, when it that was at Wembley. Seems...
So when was the last pay-per-view in
well, they did a long series of UK-only pay-per-views. Mm. So I think it probably would have been, I think there was a Raw pay-per-view that took place in like Sheffield. Mm. And that would have been about 2000 and... possibly 2-3.
Right.
But those were often UK-only pay-per-views that you'd buy on, like, you know, Sky Sports, that sort of thing. So there has never been, apart from SummerSlam 92, any of the big four pay-per-views. Yeah. Your WrestleMania, your Royal Rumble, your SummerSlam, and your Survivor Series.
Yeah.
So I think there's a possibility as well they're going to tie it in with the 30th anniversary of SummerSlam 92.
Yes.
And they're returning to the UK. I mean, that with really would be exciting.
With hyperinflation, you could have Money in the Bank, but the suitcase has to be so big because of the declining pound.
That's why they're doing the stadium. Yes. There's only 200 seats because the rest is taken up with a massive holder full of cash. But what was really interesting, you know, going to the one at the O2 is... this is not a product that is suffering in any way. Mm. That place was absolutely rammed.
Yeah.
You know, it was an incredible amount of people.
I wish I'd gone. It's just annoying. Mark. You know, they finally return and busy.
I know. But hey, look, hey, Peter, they'll be back. Yeah, so, I mean, that was really exciting. And so, again, thanks very much to Joe. I've been a really bad... I haven't even emailed him to say thank you. I feel terribly guilty
He'll
by the time I'm around to it. Well, he will do. And thank you. Thank you so much. The other thing I've been doing, Pete, is I've spent the last couple of weeks immersed in the wrestling career of Jimmy Savile. I know I've been threatening this for about three years.
You really have, Mark.
I've written it up. I'd written it originally as the sort of opening story in the newsletter that we give out on Patreon.
Mm.
But I think I'm going to put it separately, only because it's over 10,000 words, very long. But also, I mean, just the very nature of it. I think, you know, it's a bit weird to jam it in a newsletter full of fun and jokes when it's heavy in parts. You'll be really pleased to know, Pete, as well, that I've broken new ground, and I believe that it is the most complete version of Savile's wrestling career that has ever been published. Even the guys at Wrestling Heritage who supplied the biographer is he a biographer? He did it after he was dead, and it's a really good book. But his name's Dan Davis, and he wrote a book about Savile called In Plain Sight, The Life and Crimes of Jimmy Savile. Mm. And it's an astonishingly brilliant book. He had basically given me some information on Savile's wrestling career that he'd looked at but decided to do nothing with.
Mm.
And I found an extra couple of matches that no one's even talked about. So, I mean, it really is the last word. I know everyone's like, you know, where can I go to really find out about Jimmy Savile's wrestling career?
Yeah.
Well, you can go on our Patreon and it's going to be up by the end of the week. Is it great? Yes, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating look into the world of Manchester's organised underworld of crime, 60s British wrestling. Jimmy Savile, a lot of the people he went up against, which is one of his early opponents was called a guy called Peter Preston.
Mm.
And Peter Preston took part in one of the only shoot matches that ever went out on television in Britain, where he pinned the huge kingpin at the time, Mick McManus.
Mm.
And then instead of allowing Mick then to pin him and, you know, win the match, Peter Preston fought him off. Mick McManus had to basically take matters into his own hands to get disqualified so that it didn't just become a clear pinfall loss. There's some fascinating sidebars in that whole thing.
Mm.
It's so interesting because Savile, of course, by his very nature, didn't want anyone to know what he was doing.
Yeah.
British wrestling depends on people not knowing what happens behind the scenes and how it works.
Mm.
So those two shadowy worlds coming together was just mental. It's been really difficult to find out about stuff, but it's important work, Peter.
Yeah, Mark, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to 10,000 words as well.
Oh yes, and I was able to refute one of the assertions made in the inquiry by Dame Janet Smith regarding active abuse that took place on BBC property. Let me make it clear the thing that I found actually bolsters the account of a victim,
right,
which Dame Janet Smith says she can't necessarily find a key piece of evidence. Look, just read it.
I mean,
I know that's not the thing that makes it sound, you know, like exciting. I'm listening to a wrestling podcast.
Yeah.
Don't really want to get into inquiries from 2012.
No, but I guess you're in a situation where you would be, you're helping the prosecution.
My point about it is nobody pays any attention to wrestling. Mm. And you look at like Jimmy Savile's life, every single world that he inhabited has been the subject of inquiry, apart from wrestling. Everyone's just like, well, that's just wrestling.
Yes.
You know, not
that's just
that.
A nightclub appearance.
Yeah.
But even that would be kind of probed, wouldn't it, I suppose?
Well, his nightclubs were, you know, but they ignore wrestling. And actually, one of the things that they basically, it's a complex thing about what colour his hair was when.
And right, okay.
The inquiry says he started dyeing his hair in 57, although one of the victims says that in the late 50s he had dark hair. Mm. And they were like, we've been online, but we can't find any photos that are dated that show him with dark hair. So we believe from 57 he had bleached hair.
Mm.
Wrong. So in 66, when he begins his wrestling career, dark hair.
Right.
So it had they looked at wrestling with anything, they would have been able to actually put some other pieces of the puzzle together.
Mm.
That was left up to Mark Haynes to do.
As always.
Look, I'm really proud of it. I don't mean that in a way of going, this
I'm really
is a
great
read. Yeah, this is like a little bit of wrestling journalism.
Yeah.
That, you know, if there's any justice, will get me either knighted or at least a slot in the WWE Hall of Fame. Grand. So let's have a look, Peter, at the last WrestleMania, WrestleMania 37, night one. We left it basically at the point where the opening credits started.
Yeah, we'd gone through the waxy Vince McMahon.
Oh, yes.
America the Beautiful. I noticed on a rewatch last night that during America the Beautiful, when the guitar lady starts doing her guitar bits, Otis is really dancing. Like, Otis is really thrusty dancing into America the Beautiful. Couldn't take my eyes off it.
Is that disrespectful?
I just want to fuck Otis. I just think he's magnificent human being.
He was at the live show. And he was one of those guys that
Mark, I'm angry.
You see from a long way away, and you go, even though we're a long way away, I can tell that is the biggest man I've ever seen in my life.
Husky.
A great big, like, pink block of butter. Oh, just amazing. They have those credits, and it's more of that terrible Rufus Hound sounding voiceover.
It's not got any better, has it?
Not
since
at
the last
all.
One?
No, I mean, last year it basically picks up off last year's credits, and so you got, you know, Drew McIntyre kicking an octopus, and, you know, that sort of thing,
and it makes you sort of go, this one isn't special. This is a continuation of last year.
Entirely
inexplicably,
they had a year to kind of go, you do something about being back. That's the big thing that they do in this whole thing. It's not about here are the good matches.
Mm.
It's about we're back.
Yeah.
Well, then go
do
we're
something.
Back.
Don't do the thing you did last year behind.
Exactly. You're not back.
Yeah.
You're still there.
You make it kind of feels like they sort of went, look, we spent money on that and that was a waste of money because you couldn't put bums on seats.
Yeah.
But yeah, just weird. Very strange.
Some of the lines, I mean, there's a bit where he goes, well, enough of the tall tales. Let's drop some realness, as the kids say.
Ugh.
And I was just like, oh, is this written by 65-year-old men? Well, okay, I don't know who we should get to write the WrestleMania open. Should we contact the editorial board of the Daily Mail?
Shall we get someone from Spitting Image to reboot?
Oh, it's terrible. And in the middle of it, I think one of the lines that the Rufus Hound man says, and I should make it clear, it's not Rufus Hound.
It's unfair to bring Rufus into it.
It is. It just sounds very much like Rufus Hound. But there's a bit where they sort of go, and you can't not watch on Peacock. And yummy boot. Nom, nom, nom. Just The Office wouldn't do that. They wouldn't sort of go, you know, we've got to write special episode where we just continually sort of like uncritically mention that we're, you know, it's someone else's bloody brand. Terrible. There's a lot of chat within this about the cold open as well and really self-referential stuff that's just not funny. It's really excruciatingly bad. And then we get there's another voiceover that goes, welcome to WrestleMania. And then there's another voiceover directly after that just goes, the global entertainment event WrestleMania. Just stop ruining it. It's so easy. We're back. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
It's all it needs to be. And here are the matches that you'll be excited about.
Mm.
What happens now, if you watched it live, is there was a 30-minute delay.
Yes, because the rain was coming.
Because of the rain.
Yeah.
And what they basically had to do was they couldn't have people out in the ring. Because they were worried that they would be struck by lightning on television and die.
Right.
So they...
The crowd's all right.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure when you do it, because of the COVID thing, they had a lot of, you take personal responsibility. Mm. We aren't responsible for anything.
You just turned up. We didn't organise this.
So as the thunder and the lightning starts, everyone's going, oh, that was a lucky stroke that we had got that written in. But what happens is they have to fill the time. And they do this by... getting interviews with anyone who happens to be backstage, and they just bring them over and they do promos.
Mm.
And this is the first time in a long time where the promos done by the performers have been off the top of their heads, unscripted, and they're just basically told the time they need to go to.
Yeah.
And the leap in quality between what we normally saw and what we saw in this half hour was startling.
Yeah. It was just off the clock a little bit.
Yeah. And they were natural, and they were saying stuff that made sense, and they weren't trying to get across
Peacock.
Weird. Yeah, exactly that. And what it was almost like you forget, of course, because of the era of scripting being done by writers who aren't wrestlers. You know, they are,
and who don't inhabit the characters of the wrestlers. No. The wrestlers inhabit these characters 24/7.
Yeah, and the other thing about, absolutely worth saying, the writing jobs in WWE are not coveted jobs.
Mm.
They are incredibly difficult jobs because you're expected to work most hours of the week.
Mm.
You know, they are really, really hardcore, and they don't particularly like employing people who are big fans of wrestling.
Right.
They like to have people who are from the entertainment world, but they don't have the stain of wrestling interest about them. So what you end up with is generic and bland stuff that most wrestlers wouldn't naturally say.
Mm.
When you give the wrestlers the chance to do it themselves, it's much, much better.
Yeah.
Now, this was originally on the network as an extra to WrestleMania.
Mm.
They had the first half an hour, you know, was there. It's since disappeared on my one, unless I'm looking in the wrong place. But it's a real shame because it was just a good moment where everyone's working on the hoof, on the back foot, and something great came along as a result. Instead, what happens on the network show, of course, is we just go through to the first match. We have our hosts then come in. So originally, after that half hour where the weather was, you know, causing problems, they then brought in the hosts of WrestleMania this year, Hulk Hogan and Titus O'Neil.
Mm.
It's an uncomfortable pairing, this.
It is, because what Hulk Hogan's done.
Yes.
And, but they could blow the faces off Mount Rushmore, as they say. Confusing. Why would they want to do that?
That's a terrorist act.
Yeah, it's a terrorist act.
Yeah, and then after that, we could, like, shoot up a casino. What? Where's this going?
Why are you Mr. America for a bit?
I wear a mask so that the FBI can't... okay.
I'm going to take the Capitol. Oh, you wanted... that's how that's manifested itself, Mr. America.
Let's kill a bitch. Bishop. Can we just like do the intro and no, you're either with me or against me. The Titus comes out and he's wearing a blue jacket and orange trousers.
Yeah.
And I was amazed that, you know, he can pull that off.
Oh, big guys can't wear suits, but he really can wear this suit.
And it's if you turned up in that, everyone would just go, have you lost your fucking mind?
Are you selling cars now?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, someone's a coke dealer from a Judge Dredd film. Jesus Christ. He looks great.
Yeah.
What happened on the night when Hogan came out is there were boos. And it was the one thing that I don't think they were expecting.
Mm.
They were concerned about the reactions that everybody would get because they lacked a year.
Mm.
But what they thought was the crowd will be so happy to come back that they will certainly cheer the legendary Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case.
Mm.
They've turned the music right up now.
Mm.
So you do not hear the booing. And the only things that you can sort of notice it's still there is it sounds like generic... Yay! But then occasionally there is a cheer and you go, oh, that's a different noise.
Yes.
So I don't know what this one is. Yeah, it's been slightly flattened out. And the other thing is Hogan's face, which he is putting a brave face on something. And if you didn't know he was being booed, you'd think he'd shat himself. He looks very sort of like... you can see in his eyes... it's not matching the smile.
No, yeah.
And something has unsettled him.
Yeah.
It frightened him.
Stephen Graham in Snatch, where he's about to be killed.
Yes, yeah. It's Bob Hoskins in the back of the car at the end of The Long Good Friday.
Yes.
Where it's beginning to sink in that things have gone badly wrong. And Hogan looks really, really, really anxious. Mm. Hogan goes then into a nervous tick of continually saying brother again and again and again to Titus O'Neil. And what it sounds like he's really stressing the fact that he views all men as his brothers.
Yes, yeah, and talking like...
And that just reminds you.
It just reminds you.
Hey, brother, I'm not racist. I didn't say you were. Well, I'm not. You know, okay, that reminds me that you were racist. But rain, sleet or snow, it doesn't matter, says Titus. It did. It did.
Because that's all anyone's talking about.
That's why you're half an hour late.
Yeah. The thing about rain on the television, it's actually like they frequently use like milk, don't they? Because you can actually fucking see it back in the day you used to anyway. You can't really see it that much unless you look at the crowd. So for the global audience that's watching, apart from the pitiful 30 or 40,000 by WWE standards is watching, it doesn't really matter to anyone else because you can't really fucking see.
There's the most disappointing thing in life is when it's really, really raining hard outside and you go, take a photo of me.
Yes.
And you get in it. And when you see the photo, you're like, it just looks like I'm outside.
Yes,
there
exactly.
is no rain there. No. Really disappointing. Hogan then goes into his, so what you gonna do? And Titus interrupts him. Because I think Hogan has come in too early.
Mm.
And they haven't been able to say that WrestleMania is over two nights.
Yes.
So Hogan sort of goes, so what you gonna do? And Titus goes, don't forget, we've got two nights. That sort of thing. And you can see Hogan just going, this is not going down in the pantheon of great Hogan moments. This has all gone a bit wrong. And then, as they go off, a massive skeleton appears above the stadium.
Ooh.
What does he want?
Stop the rain, I don't know.
Oh. Oh, wet humans, yum, yum, yum. What a living nightmare. So we get the first match. It's only taken an episode and a half to get here. Well done, everyone. WWE champion Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, who won last time out.
Yep.
He's first on first.
Yes, he is. This was basically his reward for carrying the brand during the pandemic. There is a heartbreaking little bit that he did where you can see that what he was hoping still was that he would go on last. You
right,
know,
yeah,
he's main evented previous WrestleMania in front of no one.
Mm.
What would be nice is to be the first person to main event WrestleMania now the fans are back.
Yeah.
He's missed that year. Mm. He did a little interview just beforehand where he didn't know where he was in the card.
Oh.
But obviously they'd said to him it's one or the other. So he said, I would be happy opening the show or closing the show. This year is so unique in the sense that the last match... Every match at WrestleMania is a main event. Let's be realistic. If you're on at WrestleMania, you're in a main event. But when you're fighting for the championship, generally, it's cool to close the show. This is such a unique WrestleMania without having the fans there for an entire year. But that first reaction is going to be so, so special. So that's why I said, if I finish last, the last match, that's phenomenal. That is fantastic. That's tradition. But if I'm in the opening match, to me, that's also just as big. Because if you get to walk out in that first match and get the crowd full of energy and all those pent-up reactions that have been keeping inside for a year, that's going to be special too. So either way, I'm happy.
I think you'd get a more honest reaction out of Bobby. You ask him.
I really do feel for Drew McIntyre in that respect. I think, you know, he was hoping to have that main event tonight, but that was not the case.
He did get to call Bobby Lashley a big ball bitch.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Clash of the Titles is the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. Join Alex Zane, Chris Tilley and Vicky Crompton as they celebrate Halloween with a month of Stephen King films. Kicking off this month of King vs. King, it's The Shining vs. Doctor Sleep.
We also get this amazing shot of Wendy and Danny lost in the maze and the camera stalking them and Jack looking down at this model of the maze. The lengths that Kubrick went to make it feel like, is Jack controlling this maze? Is this maze Jack's mind?
Search Clash of the Titles on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
He comes out, he's got his sword.
Yes, yeah, he's a sword guy now.
Yep, sword guy.
Sword guy, he's gone off on a forum, he's got a girlfriend who's into Pokemon and he's got himself a sword. That's what he's into.
He comes out, he slots it into the floor when he comes out and it's almost like that makes the fireworks go off. I mean, it's not, that doesn't exist as a thing.
No.
But that slot is never quite the right, it's never quite a snug fit.
No.
And it's always a bit wonky.
Wobbly wonky.
Between this WrestleMania and now, he's broken the sword by accident.
Oh.
By smacking it into the floor and it being wonky and it's snapped off.
Really? So, yeah. What, in IRL or just kind of...
In IRL, not in storyline. I think he sort of hid it in storyline. It was, you know, what is this? And the funny thing is the sword isn't like a fake sword.
No.
It is a real sword, but it's just like you cannot keep on smacking it into the floor.
Yeah.
It'd be like if you were a kid and you had a sword, you know, you would go out and start going, going to smack it into the pavement.
Yeah.
And if you've got it between two of the slabs,
a railing,
it's going to break.
Yeah, of course
it's going to break. You're going to be in a lot of trouble. Your older brother is going to come back and go,
where's my katana?
Who's been in my room? Who's taken my samurai swords? I had a friend when I was growing up in Hatch End, and his brother was very into martial arts.
Right, yeah.
And he was also very, very, I mean, the problem is, when you're younger, when you're about like 9, what is more exciting than the idea that someone's older brother has got a like display of martial arts weapons?
Yeah, definitely.
And so he was obsessed with two things. One was martial arts, and two, nobody going into his room. And those two things, they just don't match.
Like, oh, people want to be in there.
I've got to go and see them. I've got to go and actually hold a shuriken. <You know? laughs> I don't think he's in prison now, but he probably doesn't have the swords anymore.
No. I went into Japan. Do a podcast about Chan, absolutely bum it. Think it's a great place to go and get pissed. Mm. But my partner bought me a sword recently, like the last couple of years. So now I'm a Japanese enthusiast, a Nihonophile with a sword,
and should be
put in prison.
You are very sinister. Are you well into hentai?
I'm asking you now honestly, are you well into it? I just truthfully, no, Mark.
No,
there's no honesty to hentai.
No,
I just worry about the terribly cutthroat world that is hentai creation and manga drawing. You know, these guys don't make a lot of money. You think it's just, you think the guy who draws all the hentai is going to be minted, but it's an entry level job, £12,000 a year.
I think your worry about hentai that the creators are underpaid.
Misplaced. Yeah. But at least there's no actual women in it.
Well, no, that's true. That is true. Although, by what I know, the depictions are basically illegal.
Children. Yeah.
Terrible stuff.
Oh, dear.
So, I love this period of Bobby Lashley. Mm. This for me is great. He is in a little stable called The Hurt Business.
Right.
With Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander and MVP, who really gives him a sort of great rub. MVP is ace in this run. Mm. I love what MVP is doing, and I think it's actually really, it reminds you about how decent his first run career in WWE was. Mm. But, you know, I think this is the sort of thing that will eventually push him into the Hall of Fame. I think this elder statesman who is just, you know, debonair and suave, but also not a joke in any way. He's brings a realism to that character that I think is really, you know, unusual in wrestling. And I really, really enjoy it. It's a perfect example about how if you want to make someone into a main event star, you just book them right. You just make them dominant. You don't make them, you know, weak in any way. And how they've got to this point is Drew McIntyre has lost the WWE title that he won at the previous WrestleMania at Elimination Chamber when Miz has cashed in his money in the bank after a big match. Miz had won that from Otis. It's now a title belt, the Money in the Bank. I mean, it's just madness. They give it to Miz. And a couple of weeks later, Bobby Lashley meets him on Raw and absolutely destroys him in seconds. I'm not one for the belt being hot-shotted around to build up other angles. You could easily have built up Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley that they meet for the belt that Drew McIntyre holds here, and they could have still gone in the same direction. There's a funny thing that they continuously do in this WrestleMania, and it's more prevalent now than it's ever been, which is it's not really so much about long-term booking. It's about moments. And that thing about this is a WrestleMania moment.
Yeah.
What they're looking for is those moments. And things like, you know, even Big E recently winning the WWE belt. The problem with the way that it's done is it's not done that Big E has done a traditional title chase and deserves that big moment in that big match where he proves himself. They do it that, oh, you didn't think it was going to happen, here it is, that's a moment.
Mm.
And moments are not great for long-term success in wrestling.
Yeah.
And you begin to see sort of, you know, things like the Miz thing of getting it to Bobby Lashley. Rather than work out how they can do that as a long-term program, they just go get the belt on him and then he's fighting for it. So just a bit of thing. The only thing I always find with Lashley is he has a face that he cannot hide the look of worry in his eyes.
He's got big eyes.
He's got big eyes, like a Disney princess.
Very expressive.
And he looks often a bit startled, and a bit like, what are they doing? And it's the only thing that I always, it always makes me feel for him.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily what we should be doing with a heel, who's supposed to be violent. There's a point where Lashley, who has done MMA in the past and was a high level amateur wrestler, is you know, grinding on the mat with Drew McIntyre, and Michael Cole shouts out "Pound and Ground" by Lashley. It's ground and pound.
Yeah.
You don't put it in the other way around. No, oh, right. Where'd you get your shirt from, Spencer and Mark? You know? Good. I wonder if you could open up a company called Spencer and Marks.
Spencer and Marks. I don't think that's S&M. Not passing off, is it?
See, yeah. What do you sell? We sell fetish wear, but it's wonderful quality.
Very high tog.
Mainly to colonels. There are some really exciting big throws in this as well. Two big men just chucking each other around.
And they're
like
working
sandbags.
Hard, I think. It's a really good start.
18-20 this match goes for. Mm. And that, on paper, you would go, that is much too long.
Yeah.
But the two of them together, you go, this is great.
I think the crowd dip in the middle and then they come back in, I think.
Yeah. And what's funny about this, I think you going into it, you just go, oh, okay, you know, get this out of the way. But this is both men's best WrestleMania match by a long chalk. Mm. And it's a bit of a thriller. It's surprisingly great. Historically, a couple of little interesting factettes. This is the only time that a former pay-per-view main event for the company TNA has also been a main event in WWE.
Oh,
so Lashley and McIntyre had met before.
Oh, nice.
In a TNA main event.
Is that kind of pre... Because Drew McIntyre, a man for whom beards have been very kind, that's when he didn't have a beard.
It was,
looked a bit
weird.
I don't like it.
No.
He looks like... He's like, oh, I see why I've grown that.
Yeah. I think Lashley as well at the same time. There was a slight thing of Lashley had left WWE, he'd gone into MMA, and he'd come back with a better sort of, you know, feel about him, but he was still lacking. There was something, you know, so... It's just more and more, as there are more wrestling companies, what we're seeing is you can probably go back and within the next 5 years, you know, there'll be lots of matches that are WrestleMania main events that will have happened in other places.
Yes.
Which is sort of a fascinating little bit.
I like that.
It had been suggested originally that McIntyre would have a rematch for the belt with Brock Lesnar. That was the original plan.
Right.
But as it became apparent that the place wasn't going to sell out, Brock Lesnar had no intention of wrestling in front of a handful of people. They decided that they would go with Lashley instead and then did all of the machinations to get to there. This is the first ever time as well that the WWE title has been defended in the first match at WrestleMania. We've seen it over the previous years where the world title was defended by Edge against Alberto Del Rio at WrestleMania 27. And at WrestleMania 28, Sheamus won the belt from Daniel Bryan. Mm. So that one has been done. WrestleMania 35 saw Seth Rollins win the Universal Championship from Brock Lesnar. But this is the very first time that the WWE title, the longest running one in the lineage, has ever been in the first match of WrestleMania.
Mm.
Proper fact there.
Well, yeah, and does it say anything wider about that company? They don't give a shit about the things anymore.
It certainly talks about how titles are not important, really. And, you know, the problem, again, with that is wrestling can be a very simple thing if you make sure that there's a goal. And traditionally, people have always made the belt the goal. And that is the thing that they bother fighting for and they are continually working towards. Mm. And traditionally, that belt would always have been the main event of any pay-per-view. When you see it in the opening match, there is something that tells you, not necessarily that they're you know, don't care about it, but certainly that it's the importance of a belt is no longer in the same position in the card. Not great. You need to keep your belt strong.
Yeah.
You look at Japan, you know, the only last couple of years through the pandemic, they've got a bad pandemic. The belt has always been kept strong. Recently, it's been going to, you know, a couple of people like Evil, who they didn't quite see at that level, and it's really affected the business. Once you devalue a belt, you can never get its value back.
Mm.
It's very difficult to do, and the belts have become devalued over time.
Is that the FA Cup?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You get more titles in there as well,
and
it dilutes it, you know, and it's it is confusing. Mm. I still find it difficult to work out the difference between the Universal and the WWE title.
Mm.
I cannot work out who holds what. it's just very, very hard.
It's Gangrel.
Should we quickly have a go through a women's gauntlet match?
Yes.
Just because there's not a huge amount to say.
Yeah.
This is a series of tag matches. Winner stays on, involving most of the women's roster who aren't in key matches.
Yes.
Attempt to get them on. It's the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal in a different version. Get people on the card so that they can get a payday and get their faces seen. Mm. The opening match is Naomi and Lana versus Carmella and Billie Kay.
Yeah.
Billie Kay, she's so good at the non-wrestling side of wrestling. and is not great at the wrestling side of wrestling. I really, really like her. She'd had a good pandemic where she'd spent a lot of time previously in the tag team, the Iconics, who were very funny and very charming. Mm. And then she had done a long thing that had run through the year where she was continually trying to team up with people by giving them her resume and headshot and things like that. And it was just a sweet thing. She's from Australia.
Mm.
And she instead of, it's sort of an odd thing, they never ever portray her as being, you know, sexy and beautiful. She is portrayed as being a big idiot.
Right.
And she's always sort of, you know, her famous line she said in a backstage interview was, "Are you joking me?" And they've got her as this brassy sort of Australian, which I think
ruffian.
Is, yeah, yeah, it's a nice, yeah, nice bit of character work. Mm. And she was very, very good at it. There is a point, I think, in the second match she has here, which is against the Riot Squad, where she does a sort of sunset flip reversal bit, which is among the worst like moments of any WrestleMania in-ring wise.
Grabby. It's very grabby.
Oh,
isn't it?
It's just, it's almost like you've seen it once on a video and you've gone, go out and do it, and you've gone, give it a try.
Yes.
And she does that. There are some rough moments in this.
Mm.
You have a split between the performers who are very, very good, and you have a split between the performers who are there for comedy or have primarily been managers and assistants and valets.
Mm.
And that's noticeable. So they beat Naomi and Lana. About whom there's very little to say here. And in come the Riot Squad of Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan.
They sort of dress like Joker and Harley Quinn from Suicide Squad.
Are
they allowed to do that?
Well, I suppose it's...
It's different enough, but the colours are very similar.
Yeah, can you... I mean, I suppose they could say, well, it's not, and you'd go, come on.
It's like, remember when you had to spend all that money on the Marvel thing with Hulk?
Yeah.
It's just, you're doing this again, lads.
It's parody law.
It's,
is it? Why is it a parody?
Because it's Mrs. Joker.
Yeah, because I'm the Harley Quinn, though, that's a woman.
Oh, that's
again.
A woman, isn't it? Yeah,
she's
a little bit shorter. Say something like
I'm a piss bucket. That'll be parody law. Parody law. They look great.
Yeah,
they are good in the ring, the two of them. Mm. I mean, certainly Ruby Riott. What's funny is by the time we've got these three teams have come through, half of the people involved so far will be let go within the next couple of months.
Right.
Just arbitrarily.
Yeah.
So we lose Lana, we lose Billie Kay,
right,
and we lose Ruby Riott, which is a big surprise. Mm, I mean, she's, in this match, she is far and away the best performer. She will, of course, end up in AEW, where she is doing tremendously well at the minute. It does seem odd who they get rid of. The team of the Riot Squad, they beat who is it? Carmella and Billie Kay, and then they go up against Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke,
dressed as the '90s.
Yes, aren't they?
Dressed as the '90s.
They're wearing hot pink, and I like the fact that they've matched it and they've gone, it's WrestleMania, and we're in a tag team, so let's wear a WrestleMania thing. Mandy Rose slipped on the way to the ring in the rain, landed on her bottom really hard.
Oh no.
They've cut that now.
Right, I thought this. I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's a bit heartbreaking. Yeah. Those moments are human moments.
Yeah.
She recovered from it.
It's all part of it, though, isn't it?
It is. It's a sporting event.
Jesus.
It's not like you go, well, let's do it again.
Yeah.
It's a sporting event. It has to be a record of the evening.
I'm not paying for what they think is the best part and the worst, you know, and cut out the worst parts.
I mean, that was a bit where you go, fell in love.
Yeah.
Right, and they've gone, you cannot see that. And you're like, why? She fell on a bum. It's a bit more fun than just what, then cutting to, it's got a picture, you know, the shot is of Ruby Riott just in the ring waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You literally cut out something that was fun for something that was not fun. People fall over.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
Carmella can't do the moonwalk, but you left that in.
That's true. Mandy Rose is really good. She's one of those people who, there is no reason she should be as good in the ring as she is. She's really hard hitting and she's really sort of like explosive and surprising. Dana Brooke is, I really like Dana Brooke. This week, she was criticised by Corey Graves on television. So even though he's, I think talking about the character, he was like, you know, she's been here for years. She's never achieved anything. You know, I think she should think about moving on. And people were a bit like, hang on a fucking second. You know, don't say stuff that legitimately, you know, puts ideas into people's heads and goes, yeah, you are slightly hanging on a thread.
At a time where everyone's getting fired as well.
Completely, yeah. I really like her. There was a thing that really, really warmed me to her about a year and a half ago. Mm. She began openly saying she wanted to go out with Dave Bautista on Twitter.
Right.
And they began having a Twitter thing and they arranged to meet up. And I presume they did the act. Why not? It didn't go anywhere. But I thought there's something about her that I really, really like, because I liked her open sort of frankness and, you know, just seems like an absolute dude.
Yeah.
And she does almost break her neck doing a swanton here, which is she jumps off and she's so close to the ground. But I mean, really, if it had been, you know, I don't know, a couple of inches either way, we would have watched her die.
It's a shoulder breaker at the very least.
Yeah. They beat Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, the Riot Squad, and then they go through to the final match, which is Natalia and Tamina. The problem I have with this match is there is no story that's being told here. So traditionally with a gauntlet match, what you do is you have a babyface team who is going up against the odds.
Yeah.
And they have to get to a level where either they will win and get the title shot the next night, which everybody wants, or they will lose to an evil team who are, if you like, you know, clearly going to be unbeatable. What they do here is they go, you're not in the first match. You win the second match, you win the third match, and then you've got the fourth match. Well, the story being told is the Riot Squad have done all the work against the odds.
Yeah.
They really have to get to a point where if they're going to lose, it's, you know, not because they lacked heart. And instead, what you get is a series of four-minute matches where there's no build of heat, there's no excitement, and you go up against this last team who don't seem any better or worse than you, and you just lose.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And so, these are the daughters and nieces or whatever of some famous guys you knew in the 80s.
And as a team, they managed to beat another team who had already done two matches.
Yeah.
So who has got over here? You haven't had the baby faces come and have a triumphant win. You haven't had the big team beat a team of note because they've just been through a load of matches, and the winners are the people who came out 3 minutes before.
And Mark, even the commentators at the end, they fuck up. Sorry, not the commentators.
The ring announcer.
The ring announcer fucks it up.
Yeah, he says, I think it's in one of the earlier matches, he says, the winners, the Riot Squad.
Oh, yes, that's
and
right.
And everyone has to go, and he goes, oh, yeah, sorry. The team
Correction, the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Do that? They should do that more. Well, like, things that have gone wrong. Oh, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, you take out Mandy Rose falling on her ass, but you leave in Greg Hamilton, the ring announcer, saying something patently wrong. Just nuts. End this one with this bit, but one of the things that you touch on there about like ring announcers getting things wrong and everything, the commentary on this WrestleMania is fucking pitiful. It's so bad. I think you've got the problem with it is there's so much wrestling going on and they are using Michael Cole on so many shows and Corey Graves. They've gone, oh, you're going to be the main guy now. And so he's doing loads of shows as well. And what happens is by the time you get to WrestleMania, they are just like, it's another night.
Yeah.
We've done six of these already this week. We're going to do six of them next week. Here we are on Saturday and Sunday. It's just another couple of gigs. And they have no sense of getting over the work in the ring beyond anything they would normally do on, you know, Raw or SmackDown. And there's loads of sort of like, oh yeah, so last week he really, it's fucking WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Concentrate on this. You've got more eyes on your product on this show than you have for the rest of the year for anything you do.
Yeah.
Why you wouldn't go make it a special night? You know, guys, take 2 days off and just get all those notes and let's really, really big up the majesty of this show. And instead, you've just got this insipid sort of, you know, constantly talking about what happened 3 weeks ago as to why they're fighting.
Yeah.
I couldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Just do a good job. The commentary is so bad on this that actually as soon as you notice it, this WrestleMania becomes about three times worse than it should be. It's really, really poor. There are so many different things in wrestling that you can get wrong that don't seem massively important until you begin going, actually, no, that's massively important. We've learned that about crowds not being there, about how important the crowd is. When you watch stuff like this and when you watch stuff like AEW, whose commentary team are excited about the stuff and who are, you know, passionate, listening to WWE commentary on this WrestleMania, it was one of the worst elements of the entire show.
Yeah.
Really, really annoying.
Well, Graves.
That's true. I am in no way saying that I would do a better job. I would find it impossibly absolutely impossible to do.
I don't think you would.
I know there are a lot of people out there in the real wrestling world who would do it better.
Yeah, you know.
And, you know, a lot of criticism of Jim Ross and everything. You are screaming for someone or like Jim Ross, who is able to get across a match in isolation as being an important and why you should be watching it and why it matters.
Yeah.
And nobody in this WrestleMania is capable of doing that. It's really, really irritating.
But it does get better.
It does. Yeah, Seth Rollins versus Cesaro is next. We will be talking about that next week.
Yes.
Before we do just quickly check out. Both men are obsessed with coffee. So Seth Rollins owns two coffee shops
in his
hometown of Davenport, Iowa. Cesaro, he is really big into coffee. He's released his own limited edition coffee beans.
Right.
But he has an Instagram account, which is called Cesaro's Cafe. And what he does is, traveling around with the WWE, he takes a photograph of every, I think it's a latte, every coffee that he buys. And he just puts it up on his Instagram. And the funny thing about them is, they are all exactly the fucking same.
Yeah, I imagine they are. That's crazy.
There is no difference between them. And he takes the same photo of just like a coffee on a bleached wood table like you get in coffee shops. And I cannot understand what he's trying to prove, because he doesn't say whether it was nice.
No, it's just a picture of his coffee.
It's just a million like stock images of coffee in little glass cups.
Yeah. His coffee, humorously, is called Espresso. S-P-R-S-S-O, Espresso.
Espresso.
The dark roast is Guatemalan from the La Mahosa, Hermosa region, from an altitude of, I don't care. and the notes are brownie.
The only question is, Pete, does it taste incredibly bitter?
Because like of how he's been treated. After years of travelling the world and checking out the local coffee shops, I finally have a coffee of my own to share with all of you. I hope you enjoy the single origin Guatemalan dark roast as much as I do. It's espresso time.
It's espresso time. I do like the fact that, you know, and the other thing is, if you're really into coffee, it's funny to go around America where the coffee is probably, you know, okay.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going on, I went deep into the Andes.
I went to the Onomotosando region. What I like about Claudia's, he's got a medium roast coffee as well, with notes of dark chocolate papaya, don't believe that for a second, and sweet. You know, just press start for great taste. And it's basically a low-res kind of video game, kind of pixel art thing. You can't do that. Cesaro, that is Mega Man.
It is.
That's the cover of Mega Man on the NES, and you've just palette swapped the character, put little, I think, shorts on him, and a weird bit of coffee.
I like it because he's gone. There are three target markets here.
Yeah.
Wrestling fans,
geeks and
coffee
dogs.
Fans, yeah. And geeks, general geeks. Yes, and, you know, I've been on Up, Up, Down a few times with Xavier Woods. I'm going to cover all of those bases.
Yeah, I'm a gamer. What's your favourite game? Mario. whatever the Mario is.
I love Horoscope Skiing.
Horoscope Skiing. That would be too niche.
Guys, look, if you want to hear more, and I think, if not tomorrow, within the next week or so, you'll get to hear the whole of the rest of WrestleMania 37, part one. You can go onto our Patreon. It's patreon.com/wrestleme, I think. I don't know, to be honest.
It's patreon.com/wrestleme, yeah.
Great, yeah. Good. And you can hear us, because it's October as well, we've been doing Halloween Havoc 1993.
Yes, it's a good one.
It is, and it's very, very spooky and frightening. It's the perfect thing for you to listen to while you read about the crimes of Jimmy Savile. Make sure you've heard the start of this, because otherwise it sounds very flippant. Sounds weird. Hey, so until next time, respect is due. Wrestle me!
Wrestle me, Mark!
Wrestle Me is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.